there, everybody, and welcome to a special PGA Championship Roundtable recap here on Musings on Golf. My name is Kelly Elbin, and along with my co-host and good buddy Bob Bupka, we're delighted to be joined by Adam Shupak, senior writer for GolfWeek.com, who witnessed history on the golf course and reported on unprecedented events off the course during the 106th PGA Championship at Valhalla Golf Club in Louisville. Adam, my friend, welcome. I'm wondering, how do you even begin to describe what it was like to cover the second major golf championship of 2024?
Yeah, it was a wild week. Everything from Jimmy Dunn on Monday announcing he's leaving the PGA Tour board to all of a sudden we find out Rory's filed for divorce. A vendor getting struck by a shuttle bus and killed, which is obviously the worst of everything that happened. And then Scottie Scheffler ending up being detained and taken away in handcuffs and booked in suspicion of four various violations. So yeah, we had a little of everything. And then lo and behold, Xander Schauffele finishes it off in fantastic fashion with the birdie at 18 to take the title.
Well, you're right about that, Adam. I mean, a wide variety of things transpired. I kind of summed it up in basically one sentence for the PGA of America. The year before, we had nothing but Michael Block. And a year later, we had nothing but Sel Block. So, I mean, it was just incredible seeing Scottie Scheffler, of all people, being in a jail cell. But I think he handled that aspect very, very well.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, he's, like you were saying, the last person, if you said of the 156 people in the field, he might have been, maybe Maverick McNealy, would have been the one other guy I would have thought, you know, wouldn't be arrested in circumstances like, or wearing an orange jumpsuit for his mugshot. It was just surreal. I woke up kind of early for me, and one of my colleagues had just seen the news. I didn't believe it. I thought this was some spoof on social media until I started seeing Jeff Darlington of ESPN, you know, in his video and reporting it out. And so yeah, we kind of hopped on it. I walked with Scotty, and it was incredible. Once he did get there, it felt like a home game Ryder Cup for Scottie Scheffler, the love and support that he had, all the free Scottie chants. And then I couldn't believe these people who, you know, some of them just took Sharpies and made up t-shirts, but others actually went to print shops. I talked to this one couple of guys who they were waiting to pick up a friend, and there was a print shop next to the hotel where they were waiting. So they went in there, and within 30 minutes they sent a picture of the mugshot, and the print shop made up the t-shirts, and they were out there in this crowd. And it was quite an environment out there. And to see him shoot 66, something I will never forget, but the way he played was incredible. I think he just ran out of the adrenaline the next day and not having Ted Scott there. I think also those two things combined to me explain anyway why he struggled on Saturday.
You know, Adam, I thought, you know, with all the bad things that had happened to Scottie that morning, unfortunately, you know, the wide variety of misunderstandings, apparently, and certainly our condolences go out to the person that lost his life just going to a golf tournament. I mean, it kind of put things in perspective. But I thought Scottie made a huge turn in the right direction when he did arrive at the golf club, because the owner of Valhalla was the guy that went down to the police station and picked him up and brought him out there. So I said to myself, Scotty's not in too bad a shape in Louisville if the owner of Valhalla is going to get involved. But I imagine he had some connections with the police department.
Yeah, I think Scotty's going to, in the long run, this is going to be, you know, the whole world knows who he is now. There's won't be any cops who won't recognize him if there ever is another time when he gets pulled over. And I think the fan support, I think that's going to carry over. He was a little bit of a tough guy to really, for fans to get behind. Yeah. You know, he doesn't show as much on the course. He's not, you know, he doesn't do it in as exciting a style. Their player, you know, I've talked to guys who said, you know, I played with them and I know he played okay. I know he broke par. Then I add up his score and he shot 65. And I'm like, how did he do that? And he, yeah, he's just so solid with his ball striking. And if he putts just half decent, he's going to roll these guys. And, you know, winning 4 out of 5 and just the way that he's done it, winning by 5 strokes, or, you know, he's the dominant player right now. He is the world number one. And it, you know, my lead for my story was Scotty Scheffler. You can't stop him. You can only hope to detain him.
Good line.
Hey, Bob, I know you stayed busy doing your reports 24th straight year with TalkSport over in the UK. Interested, separate from the drama involved with Scotty, your takeaways. I mean, you had record scoring, certainly high drama, which the PGA Championship at Valhalla produced every time, and Xander finally getting that first major title. What'd you take away? What were your big takeaways from an extraordinary week?
Well, Kelly, you mentioned record scoring, and I wanted to get Adam's opinion because I had the pleasure of sharing accommodations at the Masters with Adam. And it was funny because everybody in the media that I'd say, oh, yeah, Adam's staying with me. Oh, Adam, he's one of the sharpest guys out here. So I knew he was sharp, but to hear his colleagues extol his virtues, I thought was pretty tremendous. What was your thoughts, Adam, on Valhalla itself? What was it, a sterner test as you think is needed for a major championship?
I don't think so. I don't think it's I don't know if they're going to bring another one back there. This, as you guys probably know, the course was owned by the PGA of America. They sold it a few years back, and I don't think they're going to have the same incentive to go back there. And with everything that happened last week, I'm not sure it's going to get another chance. I think it could. I've heard some rumors of a Solheim Cup headed there. I think there'll be big events. The fans are tremendous. The PGA said, you know, record, they're going to make record money. So that could be a factor in them going back, if anything. But in terms of, is this the best course to host a major? I don't think so. I you know, Jack Nicklaus always built tough courses. This one he did in 1986, and I think it was tough then. But these guys with today's technology, you know, it reminded me a little bit of Congressional when Rory won in 2011, where, you know, the fact that they had so much rain, I think really hurt things. I think it would have been different. I think one mistake that the club made was they went to Zoysia grass, and these guys just chew up on that type of, on that grass. It's great for the membership, but in terms of hosting a major championship, I think it's just, you know, too easy for these guys to get up and down when they miss greens. You didn't see a lot of big numbers out there. There's not a lot of great memorable holes. The one thing though, it kind of also reminds me a little bit of Torrey Pines, where every time they have a major there, you get these great finishes. So in that sense, if you want a great finish, I think you could go back there for reasons to go back. But I think overall, this felt too much like a TPC week at Deer Run.
What was your opinion of the lift clean in place? The tournament officials decided not to go with lift clean in place. There were a lot of instances out on the golf course where golf balls were picking up mud and some shots were clearly affected. Should they have gone to lift clean in place or not?
No way. I don't think so. I mean, it is a factor, but that's some of the luck of the draw. And I think we might have seen something close to 59 if they had lift clean in place. So I'm glad they didn't opt for that.
Hey, Adam, you cover the PGA Tour extensively now. You have done so for years. You know Xander as well as a journalist can know a tour player, having covered him. What kind of sense, what kind of feel did you have for his chances going into last week, particularly having with Rory really running by him on the final 9 holes at Wells Fargo? Did you see this coming, the potential for this?
Well, he's been knocking on the door so much, all those, you know, 8 straight top 20s in majors. He's got the game. I think he did all the right things to try to get to the next level. you know, leaving his father as his main coach and going to Chris Como. I think that was a tough decision for him to make, but it really has worked out well. And the difference in the speed that he's able to produce and the extra yardage, I think has been a game changer for him. Not a lot of guys are able to, you know, gain that speed, but maintain their consistency and how straight they're hitting the ball. He's able to work it both ways. I felt this was a really good venue for him. And I think also having the failure last week wasn't such a bad thing. It's so hard to win back-to-back weeks. So, you know, we saw Rory, he kind of left it all out there at Quail Hollow and didn't really make any big move, especially I thought he got off to the really nice start and thought, whoa, this could be a great week for Rory with the course being soft with receptive greens. Xander needed to show that he could close one out. He changed the whole narrative about his career right now with this win. And right from the beginning, making a 28-foot birdie putt at the first hole on Sunday showed me that this might be a different day and just had some really clutch putts to keep the momentum going on the front nine.
One thing on that final putt, apparently somebody notified him that there was somebody down on their hands and knees praying that that putt went in, and that gentleman was located down in Ponte Vedra. I'm not going to mention his name, but you could probably figure it out. They desperately wanted that putt to go in.
You know, the funny thing was Xander didn't realize that there was going to be a three-hole playoff. He thought
right.
He was just going to play 18, and he wanted to, you know, avoid giving a big advantage to Bryson there.
Bob, you do see a major champ, you know, a guy breaks through like that, and it really, you know, his mettle was tested big time. I mean, I was so impressed with the up and down to save par at 17, stays tied. And then, Bob, a lot of things could have gone wrong with the 2 feet in the bunker, hitting that second shot at 18. The guy hit a great shot. He did everything he needed to do, right? He earned from start to finish. He earned that championship.
No, good point there, Kelly. And I think Adam would certainly agree with that. I mean, he's played, as Adam alluded to, he's played so well over the last several years without ever winning a major. I mean, he was certainly referred to as probably the best player out there, never to win a major. Players love to get rid of that nickname. Would you agree, Adam?
Yeah, I asked him about that. He described it as, you know, it's just noise. And he has a lot of self-belief. I think even as he didn't close the deal, interestingly, his caddy, Austin Kaiser, his college teammate, when we were interviewing him, brought up the fact that when they shook hands on 18 after, you know, they got rolled by Rory, his one comment was, "We're going to win one soon, kid." And, you know, soon came 7 days later. One other interesting thing on Xander was I've been doing this caddy survey, and one of the questions is, who's the most underrated player on the PGA Tour? And, you know, I'm looking for somebody like a Thomas Dietrich, some name you wouldn't expect. And a good friend of yours, Bob, I'm sure you know Dwayne Baca, East Hampton guy, well, from over the years. Dwayne Bach, who was on Kevin Kisner's bag a long time, and also, you know, now with Sepp Straka, his answer was Xander Schauffele. And I said, "The guy's number three in the world. You're telling me he's underrated?" He said, "Yes. People don't know just how good this kid really is."
Dwayne Bach, one of the best caddies out there. So, by the way, I just want to congratulate Scott Van Pelt, who was on our Musings on Golf last week. Outstanding job in his coverage with the ESPN. The best line I heard of the week was the reference of Victor Hovland apparently went to Las Vegas in the last few weeks to see his old coach. It clicked automatically, and the reference on ESPN was Victor left Las Vegas feeling really happy. And somebody said, "Well, he's probably one of the few people that ever left Las Vegas feeling really happy." I just thought that was outstanding.
Well, and Xander was the one who left Valhalla feeling best, as you hear from some of these clips.
It feels amazing. Just a wide range of emotions for me. Very satisfying win. I mean, I've become very patient, not knocking off any wins in the last couple of years. Winning is it is a result. I mean, this is awesome. It's super sweet. But when I break it down, I'm really just proud of how I handled certain moments on the course today, different from the past. I just kept telling myself, I was like, man, this is someone out there is making me earn this right now. I just kept grinding. You know, I get up there and just kind of chuckled. I was like, this is just, you know, if you want to be a major champion, this is the kind of stuff you have to deal with. So I dealt with it. I just kept telling myself I need to earn this and be in the moment. And I was able to do that.
Hey, we're so pleased to be joined in this PGA Championship recap by Adam Shupak, senior writer for golfweek.com here on Musings on Golf. Adam, you know, just as a follow-up with Scotty, and I'm interested from a perspective of you as a journalist and Golf Week as an entity, how do you ramp up in a hurry when a story like that breaks?
Yeah, we you know, we had a couple people, myself included, who were just about ready to hop on buses and leave for the tournament. So we kind of changed some plans and started making some calls to the police department and trying to get some sort of comment. And yeah, it changes from covering a golf tournament to covering a news story. And with it being the world number one, it was just such an unusual circumstances. I thought ESPN did an incredible job of on their coverage. And, you know, I guess it's complicated, but Golf Channel seemed to be totally absent from that whole situation. I guess there's some contracts rules that they're not allowed to go on the air and during competitive play. But, you know, it just seemed like a real miss on their part. You would think to turn to Golf Channel, not ESPN, for that story. And they weren't there. But for Golf Week, I think we jumped on it as fast as we could, trying to find out what details we could about the accident that happened that led to the death of the vendor who was hit by a shuttle bus. And then it was, you know, trying to get some, you know, I had caddies that were in the locker room that heard Scotty when he came in and kind of reporting some of that stuff through via Twitter and social media. So we were trying to get as much information as we could through any sources as best as possible.
Adam, it was fascinating to watch the transformation. There's no other way to put it, of Bryson DeChambeau, both in terms of the physique, which has changed, you know, in the last couple of years, certainly from the monster type look that he had for a while. But all of a sudden, over 4 days at Valhalla, he became the people's champion. Thoroughly entertaining, clutch at every possible moment. Why the change? I mean, you know Bryson some. Is this an intentional change? I know he's been heavily involved in social media that may have influenced sort of the way that he thinks. He's a very different guy today, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I still struggle with him the way he left to go to LIV and some of the duplicitous things that he said out on his way out the door. And just, it was hard to really know what he was, you know, he said he was staying and loyal to the tour, and then next thing you know, he's gone. But since then, I think actually of all the guys that left, I think LIV has been really good for him and his game. I think having a team, you know, he was a guy that didn't have a lot of friends out there. And now he's got this team, and he's got, as his coach Mike Shy said to me, he's got guys that are good family people. He's got Anirban Lahiri and Charles Howell III and Paul Casey. And I think he's finally got some guys that he has a relationship with. And I think that's been a really good thing for him. And, you know, I think he's one player who, even though he's, you know, kind of took the money and all of that, he also now has the time to really just focus on the majors. And he knows that's where his legacy stands. And so he was a guy that I don't think he misses playing in some of the PGA Tour events. He really just wants to gear up and he's going down his different rabbit holes to figure out what he needed to do. And I think he feels his game is built for the majors. And, you know, the last two, really three, I guess, majors, he showed that he's going to be right there. And that, you know, the one that he got at the U.S. Open in 2020 is not going to be his last.
The amazing thing is that, you know, fans love that long ball. And certainly Bryson gives him that. I mean, just unbelievable how he hits that golf ball when he connects with it. I mean, he's playing a completely different game than anybody out there.
Yeah, he hits some incredible drives, and you know, got that great break at 16 and then paid it off with the beautiful second shot to 3 feet. And boy, I really, you know, I'm happy for Xander Schauffele, but it would have been fun to watch a three-hole playoff between those two.
We'll have plenty more to talk about, including how Adam sees the PGA Tour live golf situation playing out right after these messages. Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. And we're delighted to have Adam Shupak, senior writer of GolfWeek.com, join us for a special PGA Championship recap roundtable here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Adam, any sense at all from you in terms of the what has just been a saga in regards to the PGA Tour, LIV Golf? Now you've had two PGA Tour policy board members, independent guys, Jimmy Dunn, certainly the more notable of the two, along with Mark Flaherty. Where are we? Where are we going with this?
God, I wish I knew. The Mark Flaherty news came out about 9:30 on Sunday night. I didn't hear about it till I was boarding the bus after filing my story. And it's just, boy, that, you know, to have two guys in the same week drop off the board, I think speaks volumes of just the disarray right now, going on. And from talking to some sources, what I'm hearing is, you know, Mark Flaherty was on the board for the 501c6, and everything right now is about the new for-profit end of
it's a it's a for-profit entity. It's complete. Yeah. It's a right. Yeah.
And so I think some of these guys feel like they've been forgotten, that they're not having any input on what's going on right now. And so, you know, they decided to, you know, they did what they did, and their time is up. And Jimmy Dunn, you know, I think when he left, he made some comments that nothing's being done, and you know, it's that they're no closer than they were 11 months ago when they signed this framework agreement. And yeah, you know, I think there's some people holding things up, and there's a lot going on right now, but it doesn't seem like we're getting any closer to a deal.
You know, certainly a tough position for the PGA Tour, and Adam Shupak is our special guest. And you know, you grew up in the game. Your dad, Les, a major force in the metropolitan golf area for years. You wrote a book on the former PGA Tour commissioner, Dean Beaman. What do you think Dean would do in this situation?
I think Dean would have, you know, it's such a different time now, but you know, the way Dean handled his own uprising in 1983, you know, when Jack Nicklaus and some of the top players wanted to, you know, kind of, there was a coup going on, and
yeah,
he was able to, you know, it was a very clever way that he was able to get things back on track. But, you know, he had a real vision, and, you know, I think the difference now for what Jay Monahan faces, the money that that's come in is so extraordinary from the Saudis that it, I think, you know, he maybe underestimated just what these guys, where their loyalties really were. And I think if he could go back, he probably knows he should have met with them, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when they first approached him on this. If he had just taken that original meeting, I think players would have been a lot more understanding about things. But I think just knowing Dean Beamon, he was always, you know, 2 or 3 steps ahead of everyone. I think he would have had things figured out by now. And my sense is I sense he can't be happy with seeing, I feel like the PGA Tour has just run his blueprint, the Dean Beamon playbook, for the last 30 years. And all of a sudden that's been blown up and everything is now really on the table. And, seeing it become a for-profit and the players as equity owners is a totally different landscape. And we're still waiting to see how this is going to work. If I think they need to come together, because having two separate entities, it just is, I think in the long run, going to be very detrimental to the game, and the Saudis are not going away, and they've got a lot of money. They're just going to keep draining talent and getting the new young blood, I think. And so that they need to figure something out, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
And a final question from me. I know your time is very precious. A lot of people want access to you, Adam. What do you think's going to happen down at Pinehurst number 2, site of the 124th U.S. Open?
Well, you already named the guy I was thinking of talking about, the Norwegian Victor Hovland. As you said, he kind of came out of the wilderness last week. It was after winning the FedEx Cup. You know, he was the hottest player on the planet, and to go and kind of blow things up and change instructors and try to make all these changes, it really backfired. His short game, which had gotten so much better and I think was a big part of him, of his success, took a big step back as he was working on his golf swing, and he had just hadn't broken an egg this year. And last week he decides to go get back in touch with Joe Mayo again. And he said within 30 minutes, he had things figured out, and he played incredible golf, 18 under, with the 3-putt bogey. He had a chance to get to 20 and tie with Bryson. But missed that putt to play that well. I think he reminds me a bit of Martin Keimer with his ball striking, you know, the last one to win at Pinehurst in 2014. And that week, Martin Keimer hardly chipped. He just, you know, used his putter from off the green. And I think, you know, Victor can do that sort of thing if he's on his game. And then, you know, Scotty's just, he's going to be a factor, I figure there. And, I would say Tiger Woods, a flatter walk and, you know, he's nearly won there before. His creativity around the greens can be a plus. Tougher course maybe to do that grip it and rip it style. And his experience, I think, at a place like a Link style Pinehurst is going to be to his benefit.
People call him a dreamer, Kelly. We just heard why. Talking about Tiger.
That one I did not expect. Hey, Adam, thank you so much. This has been great. Really appreciate it. Best to you going forward. I know how hard you work, and always great to read you and follow golfweek.com, man.
Great talking with you guys. Thanks for having me anytime. Yeah.